Welcome to Security Guy Radio at Orlando, Florida. Not my favorite place, as is 2016. What's your name, sir?
Michael Oldham.
And what's the name of your company?
Portsys. I'm the CEO for Portsys.
And spell Portsys for me.
P-O-R-T-S-Y-S.
And that's Portsys.com.
Yes.
Okay, what do you guys do?
We provide security products for controlling access to information. So really,
any device. Oh, access to information. Okay.
Yeah, it's access to information as opposed to an event like this, which is a lot of, around security and physical access. We do a lot around information access.
Now, information access, it would be almost like access control for information. Is that a good way to describe it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, we hear a lot about file protection, file storage, data storage, all these different terms.
Right.
And when you say access, when you say information protection, I my ears perk up, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because information means something, where data just means it could be something. So tell us the type of information you're trying to protect.
Well, it's all the information you're talking about. It's the kinds of resources that organizations use to access their information, to store their information, everything that you'd be using to get to process your day-to-day activities. So people are using applications, they're keying in information, they're putting in data all the time.
But do they know, see, this is my point, do they know that what they're putting up there is important or has a priority, it's proprietary? Or do people come to you and say, you know what, let's just protect all of it because we're not really sure what we have?
Well, it's a combination of different things. So what we're doing is it's very much like the physical security world, if you think about it.
Okay.
So from a physical security, if you're trying to control a building, you've got the building and you may have multiple buildings with all of your assets in one place.
Right.
And you're going to control the egress and the you know the exit points so that you can actually manage who's coming into the building and who's coming out of the building. And you try to do that with as few different technologies as you can. You have people, you have redundancy in different places, but you don't want to have too many access points. Well, the challenge with information security is that we've, over the years, we've created so many different ways to get access to that information, and it's just increasing. You know, you look at mobile devices,
right,
laptops, and people on home PCs or internet kiosks, and then you start doing things like adding in cloud applications and cloud resources and storage in different places that you're not even in control of. How do you manage the access in a secure manner? How do you provide security to make sure that you know who's getting access to what information, to what resources, under what circumstance? And that's really what we focus on. That's what we do, is providing a product that will give you that control over access. And it doesn't matter what device you're coming in from what location, but we do it in a way that you can get access, but you have policies that will determine who gets access to what under what circumstance, really using what we call context of access. So you sitting in your organization on a managed corporate laptop and getting access to, say, sensitive financial information.
Right.
You will end up having access to that if you're sitting inside the organization. But what happens if you take you with the same credentials, the same authentication that you've signed in with, and you pick up that laptop because it's portable, and now you go outside to Starbucks and you get access? Well, should you get access to all of that same information? Your context of access has now changed.
That's a very interesting way to phrase it. Context of access, that's right.
It
changes the policy.
It changes. So you can have a policy that says, well, you're an executive, you should get access,
right,
or you're not an executive,
right,
and you shouldn't. So you can have a lot of variables for the way that people want to gain access. Now what happens if you take the same situation and now you're at home on your home PC, where kids and everybody else has all kinds of infections and anything else
exactly
that may be, you know,
exactly,
in your environment.
It'll bring your old device problem.
Right. So it's the BYOD problem for laptops or mobile phones. It's the same question.
Right.
Should you provide access to that information under those circumstances? So you need to understand the context of access and then apply that against the policies.
Now, is this where you start before you plug anything in and start making it work? Are we sitting down at a policy person level and saying, let's look at the context of all your data? Do you help them find their data? Because I got to tell you, if you go to my office, I got tapes, data tapes that I stored things on in 1989, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I have so much information in so many different places, I couldn't even tell you what I have. And I wish it was something that somebody wanted to buy, and it might be, but I don't know where it is. How do you help the companies find their data first? Because if you can't find it, you can't protect it.
Well, I think part of it, the company has to have a reasonable handle on their data. But
okay. If
you think about it from an infrastructure perspective, you know, if an organization has basically a network and you have an ingress and egress point from the internet or anywhere else where you're going to try to get access,
right,
you've now got a control point, right? So you can manage that control point. And if you don't allow anybody in or out that's not validated, to be able to get access to information on the inside, you've now created a barrier. It's kind of the old technology. It's almost castle and moat. But
right.
What we're doing instead is we're doing it much more on the resource level. So we're getting in to each specific resource that you might have. So if you identify a data repository or an application that you want to protect and you want to create policies around that specific application, you can do that. So you can say, you know, I'm going to allow the salespeople to get access to this information, but if they're on a rooted or an untrusted Android device or a jailbroken iPhone, I may not want to let them get access at all, or I might want to give them partial access. So you could say, you know, I want to give you access to your email because I don't want you to be crippled while you're on the road. But if you got a jailbroken iPhone, you're not going to be able to upload or download attachments or files or other things.
Now, could you apply this technology to something that's not on the network, that's a hardware device? It's a thumb drive, flash drive. It's a mobile hard drive. In other words, let's say those devices plug in and then want to access data. Can you say, no, that's a plug-in? My rule is, policy is no. No plugins are allowed to access data, or, by the way, save data down. So can your software say, this file is not allowed to be saved? It
yes.
can be opened and read only.
Yeah, we have technology that with our Safe Room technology that we incorporate into our total access control framework that actually will allow you to do those kinds of things.
A Safe Room, that's kind of cool. So
yeah.
You put all your super duper, the formula for Coca-Cola goes in the Safe Room.
Well, no, it's actually the other way around. So
oh.
What you're doing is you're saying that I'm going to create an environment on that machine that is fundamentally safe. So let's say you're coming in from an untrusted device.
Right.
So I have my laptop, and I don't know the status of that laptop when you try to come in.
Yeah, I've done this. I had to borrow my kids because mine broke.
Exactly.
Yeah, okay.
So now you don't know what the status of that is, and you want to get access to corporate information that may be very sensitive.
Yeah.
Well, what Safe Room does is it creates essentially a secure bubble on that device, with its own registry, its own application stack, which is separate from the core that you have on that machine.
Oh, how cool.
And it creates this Safe Room technology. And from there, it then it connects to our gateway. And at that point, you can actually create policy on the gateway that will push down to that device in that secure bubble and say, you can upload files or you can't. You can print or cut and paste or not. Lots of different things that you can do around actually creating that. And then once you're done with the session, it all goes away.
And this is automatic. So, I was using TeamViewer, right? Because this live stream thing didn't work too good. I'm trying to work all those bugs out. And they're great customer support, those guys. They're really, really good. And they use TeamViewer. And I'm thinking of your software as similar. I come into the company. I put it on the network. And now, unknown to me, Chuck's daughter's laptop just logged in. I wasn't ready for that. Nobody told me about it. Mm-hmm. But I can now send something down to that laptop, authenticate using whatever my policy is, password, I call the IT guy, whatever. And I'm inoculating that laptop from letting anybody else in except inside that little bubble inside the device.
Right. So you can set up policies
yeah.
that say that. So if it's an untrusted device, you can actually manage it with an untrusted device policy that says,
interesting,
under these circumstances, you can do that. But it's broader than that, right?
Okay.
Because the overall solution, when you're looking at that, that's one aspect of it. But you've got many kinds of devices out there. They're mobile devices.
Right.
You got laptops, desktops, internet kiosks, whatever you have that you're going to use to get access. And that's constantly changing. We have new devices all the time. So, you know, Apple comes up with a new iPhone. It may have a different size. You know, they have come out with the iPad Pro. And some other things that happen, and they're constantly changing. So you need to have a framework, a product that actually can go in and work for all of those different devices. And the ones that we don't see, like in the future, for example, your refrigerator, when you get up in the morning, it actually will have a screen on it, and that screen could actually get access to all of your email.
Yeah, I'm worried about that. I mean, it's the Internet of Things, right?
Right,
I mean,
exactly.
Right.
So now how is the organization going to protect themselves from your refrigerator?
Right.
And what might happen to that in your house, because it's an uncontrolled environment.
It's a completely, it's an unfathomable problem to me. It's so big, your head kind of goes, oh my God, how are we going to wire this all together?
Yeah.
So how do you, if you're going to come to me and sell me this, and my little reptilian brain kind of says, I can't process data that fast, Mike. Slow me down. Tell me, give me some analogies on what you're doing. Give me a visualization on how this thing is working. Mm-hmm. To protect all my files and all these locations.
Yeah, so as an organization, let's look at you as an enterprise,
yeah.
right? You have data and applications that run your business. They sit within your data center, and they may sit within the cloud. So you might use something like Salesforce or Microsoft's Office 365 or things like that, right? So there's lots of people who are using cloud-based applications. You might also look at something that you're going to host in a private cloud. So you don't have to manage the cloud or the data infrastructure in your local data center. You may put it in a cloud, a private cloud. So you want to get access to all of that information, but you want to do it in a secure manner, and you want to have policies, and that's where we come in. Basically, we create a logical control point for access to all of that information, regardless of where it resides. You have to come to our gateway first. At that point, it's like having a single point of access, right, in the physical
world. Okay, it makes sense. Yeah, it makes sense.
Right, so we have a single point of access. We take your credentials. So you put in your username, password, those kinds of things, multi-factor authentication, whatever it happens to be.
Are you using biometrics too?
We can use whatever you want.
Right,
biometrics. You know, biometrics has some drawbacks.
Yeah.
You know, if somebody hacks your iPrint, you can't change it.
Right. Exactly.
So there's challenges with biometrics, but there's lots of other things, but we can use whatever you have for multi-factor authentication. We can also do things like we can take your physical device and we can bind that to your credentials. So let's say that somebody goes out and steals your username, right? Which is pretty easy for most people. It's their email.
Right.
So if you want to change, you can change your password, but if somebody's gone out, they can try to hack your password. If your protection is just username and password, you're in trouble.
Right.
Right. So you have multi-factor on top of it. But if you then bind a physical hardware device to your credentials with the multi-factor, you've now got three full factors of authentication.
Yeah, it's like a private key.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And it becomes very strong. But from an end user's perspective, it's very easy to use, which is really important to us.
Yes, if you can't make it easy, they're not going to use it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And they're going to find a way around it.
They're going to try and defeat it, which is worse. That's right.
You know, if you walk around in a lot of organizations today, you can look at the monitors that are around on the thing. You'll see yellow stickies of username and password stuck all over the monitor.
It's true, I know.
Right? And that's not security.
That's right.
We've actually taken security and made it really difficult for the end users over a number of years. And so we've put the burden of security on the end users, which is really horrible. Because, you know, they've got multiple different passwords. They're complicated. They change every third Tuesday. You know, if the moon is blue and you stand on your left foot, you've got a different password, right? You've got to type it in. So it's really been complicated. So what we're trying to do is we're trying to make that simple. So you have a single set of credentials to get access to the information within that organization. So from a user's perspective, you put in your credentials, you put in your multi-factor authentication, and you get brought to a portal that shows you, based on your current circumstance, the context of access, and the policies the organization has created, it shows you exactly what you get access to under those circumstances. And then from there, you just click on it, and it goes there. Single sign-on, you don't have to think, it's all behind the scenes. So if you've got a cloud application, if it's a local application, if it's a data repository, it doesn't matter, it just goes there. So you don't have to know, as the end user, you do not have to know where those things reside or have a different process based
on... Or find them, because they're hard to find sometimes.
Right, exactly. Yeah, yeah. You don't have to know all that, because it's right there and it's presented for you without any challenges. But from a security perspective, there's a ton that's going on behind the scenes. As we're validating your credentials, your multi-factor, we're looking at your device. Is it running an antivirus? Is it jailbroken? If it's a mobile device, what's the operating system? Where are you coming in from? What's the logistical place you're coming in from? What's the geography, right? Maybe you don't want to be able to have people coming in from China or North Korea into your organization.
Yeah.
And you've got policies that say if somebody's coming from there, just block them outright.
Yeah.
So, there's a lot that you want to be able to look at and apply against the policies, but you want to make it easier for the end user. And then it just goes right to the applications. That's all they have to do.
Now, Who is the driver on this in a typical corporation? This is a unique one to me. I'm not viewing this as a typical security function. When I was in charge of corporate security, I wouldn't have thought anybody would want to put me in charge of file security.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not also feeling IT is being in charge of file security. It's a weird feeling to me. Is this HR-driven? Is it legal-driven? Where is it coming from?
Well, it's always was traditionally IT. So it was traditionally IT.
It feels that way.
They would manage the access to information. But what the solutions within the IT organization always were you get a username and password for this system, another one for this system, another one for this system.
Remember old Windows file management, I could lock directories, and that took forever to try to.
Right, right. And if you're looking at it from a file perspective versus applications, there's a lot of different things. And that was traditionally done by IT security, and it's still, for the most part, it is. But it really is crossing the lines, because we're now looking at things that are policies for access to information that tie into a company's corporate identity.
And policies is driven by the C-suite. Comes downstairs.
Absolutely.
Right.
It may be that you get into the granular nature of things maybe handled by the IT administration group and security teams, but things are changing, right? And policies and things like that, based on reputation that people have with their organizations, it's a huge issue if somebody hacks into the system. So it's now got visible at the C-suite level, and you have to make sure that you're taking control of access to all of your information wherever it is. If you just went out and got a cloud service and you were a giant retail organization and you signed up for a cloud service and somebody hacks that cloud service, whose reputation is on the line?
Not the cloud service.
Right. I mean, it's probably going to be theirs too. However, the reputation is really the organization's reputation.
It's targeted to trouble, not whoever they were using.
And that's the real big problem, is you have to make sure that you're doing the right things for the organization.
Now, let me ask you, is this an additional layer? I just got back from Black Hat. Mm-hmm. In Las Vegas, right? Oh, my gosh. These guys and the brains these guys have and what they're thinking about and all the attacks we're under. It's unbelievable.
Sure. Yep.
So is your product another layer to guard against hacking? It's not a hacking prevention tool.
There is no such thing.
There is no such thing as you're going to be hacked, but it certainly puts another layer of protection behind that firewall internally. So if they do get in your network, boy, they got another problem now. Now I got this other thing to deal with. Whereas before, I could just... Woohoo, I got all the files right here.
Exactly. And it used to be that you'd have kind of the castle and moat where you got a password and username on the outside. And if you got through that,
that was it. Right.
And believe it or not, there are still a lot of organizations that are running that way.
They
still run that way.
Yeah.
And if you hack in from the outside, there's one username and password to be able to get in. And that's happened in a number of different hacks that you've seen in big organizations. So, you're creating multiple layers of difficulty for a person who's motivated to try to get in there to hack in, hack your systems.
Right.
And what we're trying to do is we work very well. Total access control works well with other technologies. So if you have firewalls or other technologies that are in there, that's fine. You can use those. We can also stand alone on the edge and be that gateway.
Okay.
But fundamentally, we need to be somewhere in the logical access flow from where the user would be.
Right.
Into the data repository or the application that you're trying to get access to.
Do you get any pushback from your IT guys that say, oh, no, we can't do that because it's going to interfere with something else we have on our system?
At one point in time, we used to see more of that because it was really networking focused and everybody was worried about what was happening over the network. But now people are starting to realize the network is really like the plumbing. You have to be concerned with it, but, there's a base level that everybody's comfortable with, and the real threats and the attacks are really at the applications.
Okay.
It's in the information in the application, so we're moving up the stack and trying to protect at a higher level. And doing things like, application firewalling, which what's good for that application and what's not. So you only allow things that are good for the application in. So we've built that into Total Access Control as well. You may want to get access to your information through a VPN. Depending on the particulars. Well, we have a VPN that's built into it, clientless, you can use. So there's a lot of different technologies that we incorporate that work to either augment or, in some cases, replace the technologies that people have had in their infrastructure.
Now, would I be using your system to protect my program files? It's kind of a weird question, but I get the data part and I get the information part. I mean, the formula for Coca-Cola, got to protect it.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe I want to protect all my applications.
Well, that's exactly
another
what
idea.
We're doing.
I mean,
yeah, no, that's what we do. So applications as well as the data repository.
Well, applications as well. Okay,
yeah,
not just the product, the information.
Right, and most people today get access to the applications rather than the information directly, right? Because people just don't go direct to the files today.
Well, that's
they may
true.
To some
well,
degree.
But, yeah, we used to.
But
they put them on a share drive, and that's where you got to
and then you got access to the files or whatever. So you still get that kind of access. But a lot of the information that's contained from an institutional perspective is on these large applications. Healthcare. Think about healthcare.
Think about
government. Yeah. Or all that information is in their systems that they have. And the access to the systems is really the critical point. And that's really what we're looking at, is protecting that as well as the data that's behind it.
Now, distinguish your product from my doctor's a great guy, Dr. Marsh.
Mm-hmm.
He's got this great practice. He had the computers. He had the handheld stuff. Years before anybody said he shouldn't had. He's always been on the edge of this kind of stuff. I'm sure somebody sold him some healthcare thing, or he developed his own system to do this. And, those systems come with their protection. Because they're not going to sell you some open platform that doesn't work. And they're going to say, oh, yeah, we got you firewalled and encrypted and protection and blah, blah, blah. We don't need anything else on that. What would you say to somebody like that to help them understand why your product needs to be included in that, no matter what other protection you think you have?
Right. So the first thing that you have with those kinds of things is usually it's very simplistic security. It's usually username and password in most of those.
Well, I used healthcare because I'm assuming it would be more sophisticated, but I'm probably
it's
wrong.
Not necessarily.
Okay, all right.
So if you're looking at more sophisticated organizations, they may put in username, password, plus multi-factor authentication or something like that, or even some device validation or other things that they may use because they want that device might actually be authorized, not the user.
Right.
So, you know, there's a number of ways that they try to work in the healthcare field in particular to make it easier for the people who are working day to day. So they don't want to hamper them in doing their job.
Yeah, because then you won't use it, right.
But when you're looking at just a single application, if your whole business runs on that single application, you can probably protect it in one, you know, one central point. But very few organizations actually do run just one single thing, which means you've got a security product for, you know, a security methodology for that one application, and then for the other application, and then for the other application.
Yeah.
None of them talk to each other.
In fact, that's true.
That's what's happened in security over a long period of time. You know, back many years ago when the internet was first created and the DARPANET was created and hooking together a bunch of universities and government agencies, everything was hooked together with nothing in between. And everybody was like, this is great. Until,
until Morris
came up with the worm and everybody got infected. And all of a sudden, we had a problem. So now firewalls get invented.
Right.
So everybody's got a firewall now to block people from getting into their organization, which was great. Until the next problem came along. And then a new technology was invented to solve that problem.
It's almost like they built it backwards.
Well, exactly.
They should have put security in first.
But nobody understood. And there's some debate about the fact, because there were people who were actually pushing for it back in those days to build security in, and they didn't.
That's interesting.
So what's happened over many, many years is that we've had a problem. We come up with a solution. We have another problem, come up with another solution.
Right.
So the typical organization now has many different technologies in there. In their data center, all working independently to do their own thing, and none of them talk to each other.
That's very interesting.
So how can you actually get any information about who accessed what? You have to go to 10 or 12 different systems to find out, you know, and none of them talk to each other.
Right.
And, you know, so you have to buy yet another product that might talk to some of your products to be able to get something that'll put the reports together. It's crazy.
Right.
But that's the way we've grown up. And it's not anybody's fault. But
it is what it is. That's right.
Yeah. Mobile device management's a great example of that, right? So mobile devices came out and everybody went, we can't use mobile devices. But people said, we want to use mobile devices.
That's
and eventually we came up with mobile device management. Really inventive, you know, a good way to manage it. But it does mobile devices. What about everything else?
Yeah.
Right. So that's where you have challenges with security. So what we've done in Total Access Control is really taken all of those different vectors and put them together into one product to manage the access, so you're not dealing with multiple different threat vectors and multiple different products trying to control all of those different things. It's now one solution to be able to manage access across the board.
Security Guy Radio has 300 shows in podcast and video form. Am I too small a company for you?
No, absolutely not.
Okay. I'm just thinking about price points and starting, because a lot of these guys I interview, we go mega to large companies. And, you know, the little guy's left out on some of this stuff.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, what we have is we have a number of different ways that we can scale from small organizations all the way up to giant organizations with, you know, tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of users. And it really depends on your infrastructure and what you want to manage, because we have cloud deployments that you can use all the way up to full on-site hardware appliances and everything else, depending on what your needs are. We have customers that have globally load balanced arrays with multiple data centers around the world. And we have customers who just have, you know, a virtual system that runs to protect their access. And it really depends on what your needs are, but we can work from smaller organizations all the way up to very large.
We hear a lot about encryption. I get your part, which is the access and control, and that's brilliant. Do you go to the next step and do you say, we'll encrypt it for you too, or are you letting somebody else do that?
Well, all the communications is encrypted. So everything you're doing back and forth to the applications is automatically encrypted.
No, that part I get.
So that part. But for, as far as the data goes, that's the organization's choice about what they're going to do.
Okay, so but the transmission and transfer is going to be encrypted in transit. Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah, it's all secure. It's all encrypted as it should be.
So if the organization encrypted it on top of your encryption through transmission, it's pretty safe.
Yep.
Like we talked about, it's not who's going to get hacked, it's when you're going to get hacked.
Mm-hmm.
Where do you feel we're going with that? We're always plugging holes, basically. I mean, like you just said a minute ago, describing the internet, it's like, okay, this is broken. We're under attack. We're going to fix it. Are we going to get to a point where we're going to lose that battle? I don't know.
Yeah, it's an interesting question because I think about this a lot.
The question is, do we feel that we're winning because we're stopping you guys, or do they feel they're winning because we're always one step ahead of you? I mean, that's the problem, right?
It's an ever escalating arms battle.
Right.
That's what it really is. And so what you're trying to do is you're trying to create enough defense to make somebody want to go somewhere else.
Right.
And, you know, if somebody's completely motivated to attack you, chances are with enough time and enough money, they're going to be able to find a way in. You can see it, you know, in almost any organization in the world. If somebody's super motivated and really wants to go after it, you try to put those bars as high as possible. But, you know, there are challenges with security, and we're going to always have that because of the infrastructure and the way that we've built things.
Yeah.
But there are ways to create much more secure infrastructure to be able to trace what's going on, to catch it while it's happening rather than, you know, after it's happened. You know, if you can go out and be able to look and see, hey, we've got people who are hacking into our system on a routine basis from different geographies that we don't know, that we know we don't have people in.
Right.
You know, we know we have a problem. So you can use that information to start to figure out what to do. But in general, I think there's a movement within the industry to start to change from individual targeted solutions to grouping solutions together. But it's very difficult. You know, large organizations have a tough time doing that because they have their legacy products and
yeah.
You know, they move very slowly.
Right.
You know, they're very resource rich, but they take a long time to do things.
Yeah.
So it's hard for them to innovate really quickly. On the other hand, you have the small company who's very innovative, but in order to succeed, small companies generally have to focus on a single problem, which is why we have so many great single point solutions
right.
that are out there for different problems.
Yeah.
So now you've got this gap in between that's very difficult to bridge. The big companies buy the small companies, but then they have the same problems trying to integrate their technologies.
Yeah.
So it's happening, and it's happening over time, but it does take time. And it is slow because the people with the most resources are generally the ones that take longer to actually create the problems. And as we know, security moves very, very fast. It changes all the time. So it's very hard to be able to go out. And those big companies can't go out and throw out all of their existing products and say, we're going to start all over again.
No, yeah, you can't.
Because their stockholders wouldn't be very happy with them if they did that. So it is a challenge to try to be able to make that happen. But that's kind of where we are.
So after every show, I sit here and I say, I feel better about the world or worse about the world.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel better after talking to Michael.
Great.
I feel like this is a solution that is long in coming, and somebody should have thought about it a long time ago, and now it's here.
Yep.
And I think it really adds a different layer, a different perspective to protecting information and data. And I feel better. So you got the feel better approval.
All right.
At Black Hat, I felt not so good about most of the things going on
because
these guys were trying to protect things, but boy, the challenge is overwhelming sometimes.
It is.
Technology
it
stuff. But this seems like just a very practical, logical, good price point, easy to put in place, and it's going to. The gain from it is exponential. I mean, you're going to get so much more of a gain out of it than you are putting the effort into doing it. It's a no-brainer to me.
Right.
So, Michael, thanks for coming on the show. Give us the website again.
It's www.portsys.com, PORTSYS.com.
Michael, thank you very much.
Thanks very much, Chuck.
Get ready.
Thanks.
That's very good.
Thank you very much.
29 minutes, 38 seconds.
Pretty good.
Yeah, that's pretty good. All right.